Struggling to sleep? Don't worry, babes, you're not alone. CBD brand CB2 have found that half of UK adults have had their sleep affected by the pandemic, losing between 1 and 2 hours of sleep every night. But don't worry, because CBD oil can really help. And I'm so excited that Make It Rain is working with the leading UK CBD brand CB2. Their products change people's lives through better quality sleep and managing symptoms of stress and anxiety, including mine, and my eye bags are thanking me for it. If that wasn't enough for you, their products come in so many different forms. You can choose between an oil, a capsule, a skincare range, or a candle, so you're spoiled for choice. And if you've never used CBD products before, CB2 have a 7-day Discovery Duo Starter Kit to get you going. So guess what? You can get it for half price. Just head to their website, cbii-cbd.com, and use the code MAKEITRAIN, and you can experience the feel-good difference for yourself. Hi, I'm Josh Smith, and welcome back to my podcast, Make It Rain. I'm a journalist and presenter, and I've been lucky enough to sit down and have unfiltered conversations with some truly incredible people. I know from my own experiences how powerful talking and crucially listening to others is, something you would have heard about in this very podcast. And without a doubt, my life has been changed by the people I've met. I'm so excited that you are back to join me each week to meet amazing queens who've overcome challenges in their own lives. They'll open up about their journey they've been on to harness their power and wear their crowns with pride. I really hope you'll feel empowered to own your own story and make it rain in your own lives too. In this episode of Make It Rain, we are joined by the star of Netflix's hit show, Ginny and Georgia. It's Antonia Gentry. Not familiar with Ginny and Georgia? Wow, prepare to become obsessed. It focuses on a mother-daughter relationship between Georgia and Ginny, who have to navigate a 15-year age gap, relocating to a New England town and its discriminatory community, and avoiding a mysterious past. Antonia herself was born and raised in Atlanta, and after getting her start in a small Netflix film, Candy Jar, in 2018, she was in the middle of graduating when she landed her lead role in Ginny and Georgia. She's since gone on to be nominated for an MTV Movie Award for Best Breakthrough Performance. In this episode, we talk about the intersections of Antonia's identity, the trials and tribulations of growing up, and rediscovering some of her hilarious childhood diaries, which you'll hear about shortly. There are so many amazing words about growing up in this episode, so I hope you enjoy it just as much as I did. So crowns at the ready. Well, hello. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Every day is the same to me, it seems. Time is a concept I don't subscribe to, so that's how I'm going.
I know.
How are you?
I'm good. I've just got to this stage now where I don't even know how I am, where I am, what is going on. But we are here, we're alive, and we're thriving. So we just got to focus on that, right?
Yes, that's true.
And something we have to focus on, babe. Ginny and Georgia, let's get into it. I mean, babe, you had me from the moment you stood up to the teacher in the classroom, episode one, when you said the viewpoint of the grade is only that of the white male, thus eradicating my voice as immaterial. And I was just like, yes. And as soon as I had that line, I was gonna love it. And I just thought it was so powerful. And I was just wondering, like, in the course of your own life, when have you felt voiceless?
My mom always told me, you're small. Yes, like I'm like 5'1", I'm microscopic. I have to like speak loud for people to hear me. They look over me all the time. So my mom always made sure to tell me that, you know, you have to use your voice. That's the biggest part of who you are, is having a voice and making sure that you let people know your thoughts and your agency. And I think it's easy to say that, and it's easy to kind of try and remind yourself of that, but when you're in situations, whether it's when you're young, when you're a teenager like my character, where there's a lot of power imbalances, and you're still trying to figure out yourself, I think it's hard to apply that, but I do feel lucky to have had a mom to remind me of having a voice. And by the time I got to college, by the time I became a young adult, I felt kind of more empowered in expressing myself with my peers, but also, you know, learning from others as well, their experiences. So there definitely have been moments, I think, you know, just because people underestimate me, my size, my sex, my, you know, my identity. But that is something that I think only makes me stronger, and it only makes me want to have a stronger voice because of it. So I don't know. Definitely retail, though. Retail, you don't have a voice. When you're working as a cashier, you can't say anything to these rude people. So I think there have been moments, yeah, where I've wanted to say something, but I couldn't. So
I mean, babe, I worked at Topshop when I was like, from being like 16 to when I was like 23 at uni. And like, the times you have to hold your tongue, it's just,
I know.
It teaches it's you like a whole other level of restraint.
Yes, I agree.
If you know, you know. On that,
if you know, you know. If you know, you know.
You know. And what I think is so incredible about the show, and in particular about what you were just saying, is with our identity, there's so many intersections to our identity, mm-hmm. isn't there? Especially when that comes to finding your voice and also feeling like your voice is respected. How have you navigated the different intersections of your own identity?
One thing that is frustrating, or and has been frustrating in my past, is being kind of reduced to whether it's the color of my skin or my gender or, you know, my age, whatever it may be. And feeling like I can't take up the spaces that I want to take up just because I've been told that I shouldn't or that I can't. And being in situations where people want to, you know, ask you questions like, oh, do you identify more as Black or do you identify more as white? Or, you know, you don't sound Black. You don't act Black at all. Are you sure you're Black? And just like things that they, you know, are stereotyping because that's the box that they've decided to try to put me in. And that's the box they tried to put other people in. And if I don't fit whatever convenient box they've set up for me for that moment, then there's this sort of perplexed, like, confusion. And I think for me, navigating the intersections of, you know, being all of the things that I am, but and then some, and having to kind of work twice as hard for people to understand that I am more than the color of my skin, I'm more than my gender, I'm more than my socioeconomic background, whatever it is, it's been a learning process. It's been a learning, it can be frustrating for sure. Mm. And I used to be very bitter when I would get asked questions like that, or if I would be put into situations where it just feels like you're not really a human being. You're just kind of a, I don't know, like a museum item that people are looking at through some glass. But I've come to realize, you know, it's not, any situation such as that can be an opportunity for learning and development, whether it's for that person or just, you know, on a more personal level for myself, and how I respond and how I react in those situations. You know, they can change someone's mind or not, but they can always be an opportunity for growth. And so instead of getting angry like I used to, and just getting so, you know, it used to upset me. I would come home and I would just, things people would say would just be in the back of my mind. But I think I've learned to kind of realize that a lot of these things and a lot of these people, a lot of things that they say are indicative of their lack of experience or their ignorance. And it's more a pity for them than it is for me, because I know who I am, and I, you know, try to walk throughout the world knowing that. So it's really kind of a pick your battle situation when it comes to addressing those kinds of intersections and people who may not understand the variety. Like, you know, I'm more than that. I'm also a writer. I'm also an artist. You know, I have things about me that are human that are more than just what someone assumes about me. So and that can be said for everyone, I think.
Oh my god, for sure. We all still, like, I mean, speaking as a gay man in society, I still experience microaggressions every single day. Mm-hmm. The tiniest things, and you're just like, and you sometimes just have to pick your battles with them. And it's a hard thing, is because especially if you experience it from a young age, you're almost like, I don't know, it's a really hard thing if you experience microaggressions when you were, say, like a teenager and you sort of experience them now, and you're still having to come to terms with the teenage version of you that was experiencing those microaggressions, then also the you now who's dealing with those microaggressions. And then there's still so many frustrating conversations that are going on with that. What kind of frustrating conversations are you still having to have? And what kind of frustrating microaggressions are you still coming up against where you're like, how have we not moved past this?
It's surprising. I think particularly, so last year, of course, was one of the worst years in history. And, you know, everyone is still recovering from whatever they're recovering from. And a lot of people are deep within still these battles that, and these challenges that have come up in the past year and a half. And I know last summer in particular, with the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movements and the protests, and, you know, being completely fed up with having to have the same conversations in this country about, you know, race relations and oppression and racism and police brutality. And then, of course, all of the subsidiary, you know, conversations of how we come to terms with xenophobia in our country. I think, you know, it's frustrating when you're looking at a situation, you're looking at the world in chaos, and we're still to this day experiencing these battles and running into these walls. And I know last summer, during the protests, it was a lot, you know, you see people on social media being kind of, you know, you hope they aren't being performative, but at the end of the day, posting black squares or you know, saying nice things, and the idea of on a social platform, trying to take into account, you know, your own internal biases and your own internal prejudices, it was a lot to see that, you know, everywhere you turn. Because yes, as much as I want to be able to kind of say my piece and you know, you want to scream at people through your computer screens, like, look, stop this, you know, we need to start listening to each other, stop this divide, this division, and then this unrest. But at the same time, you know, I needed to take a break, and kind of, it was traumatic, it was traumatizing, and I think it really made me kind of look in my own life at things that I have experienced and things that people have said up until literally that day. And I had a conversation on the phone with someone who is close to me, an older woman, and she, an older white woman, and she expressed to me her fears of her son being targeted because of the color of his skin. Her son is white, and she said, one thing she said was, I now understand how black mothers feel. And it kind of just took me off guard a little bit, because here I am having this conversation with a woman who is inserting herself into a narrative that has nothing to do with her, and is making so many assumptions about, you know, her own experiences and not really taking into consideration, you know, systemic racism or white privilege or things like that. And it was really, really difficult for me to talk to her about it, because it was just so shocking. Some of the things that she said were just so shocking. And I, once again, was in a situation where I had to educate someone who you would hope had already, you know, what it being 2020 at the time, you know, should have already known these things, and having a really hard time believing that I was having the conversation that I had, and coming out of it just exhausted. And so, you know, at the same time that you can find these moments of opportunity to kind of build bridges with people in terms of experience, it's also frustrating when all of the responsibility is placed on you. And so, it's kind of just this sense of, you know, you want to feel validated, and everyone wants to feel validated. But I think it's just giving the people the platform to speak their own stories and not doubt them, I think goes such a long way in terms of whether it's, you know, in microaggressions, I think it's harder to identify within yourself what you're doing to help attribute to this narrative of taking away the voice of people who are, you know, feeling, who are systemically disadvantaged because of a system that you may benefit from unknowingly. And it's just, it's a lot. It was a lot. So I've had, that was the most recent, I think, major conversation that I had was last summer, where I was still sitting there on the phone thinking to myself, I can't believe I'm having this conversation. Like, I can't believe I have to explain things to me that are so obvious to someone who, you know, is completely unaware.
It's just, the world would be such a better place if we just listened more, right?
Yeah, right? I think so.
Because
maybe.
There's so much you can learn from listening. And like in that exact example, it was like, there's no need to insert yourself into that narrative. You can just listen to the experience, right? And I think that comes from any marginalized group in this world. Like, if people would actually just sit down and listen, then we'll get so much further to creating more space, right?
Yeah, and not like get defensive or, you know, and I think that's the main thing. People get defensive very easily now because everyone assumes that everyone's under attack. And I think that's the main thing that shuts down listening, is if you're inserting your own experience first, instead of, you know, humbling yourself, swallowing the bitter pill, and really opening yourself up to, yeah, I mean, we may all have internal flaws that we have to reckon with.
And I mean, that's some of the hardest things to do in life, isn't it? To sit back think, look at yourself and be like, oh my God, I've got these flaws. Like, how do I address them? What have you kind of learned from sitting back and being with yourself in a whole new way in the last year? Because we've all had to pause and stop and reflect on ourselves and who we are. What have you learned from that experience?
It was so hard. it still is. I think, I mean, having to be by yourself and be alone with yourself and your thoughts and look in the mirror and see, really, really try and take a look at, you know, the things that are beautiful about you, but also the things that are ugly. I think it's really easy to be self-critical. And I know for me, I'm very self-critical in terms of, you know, I'm kind of I always see the next goal. I always see there's somewhere to improve, and too much of that can then become, you know, really daunting. But it's been really hard. I mean, I've had my fair share of nights just like in bed crying into my cat's fur, you know, like wishing I was a cat who, you know, I was like talking to him. His name is Butters. Like, Butters, you have it so easy. You don't have to think about any of this. But, you know, I think it's just the uncertainty. It's the uncertainty of, can I make changes that I need to make? It's the, you know, not knowing if you're strong enough to get through certain things. And I think so many people have been tested and this past year especially. And so I can only hope that people have found their strengths, you know, and I mean, and of course their weaknesses, but in those weak moments really try to pull themselves out of it, because I mean that's all we can try to do, really. And I'm still working on it, but it's definitely, it's definitely a journey.
Oh my God, that journey. I mean, one of the toughest things is to realize that sometimes in those dark moments and the moments of weaknesses is actually, it can be like sometimes some of your strongest moments when you look back, right? And I think what's so important about what Ginny and Georgia does as well is it talks about mental health and it kind of normalizes so much about it as well. What's your own journey been like with mental health, and how's your relationship with that changed as you've gone through your life?
I think it's it used to be something that was kind of like taboo in my household. You know, growing up, it was just we didn't talk about therapy, we didn't talk about, you know, my parents. I'm very close with my parents, and I think, you know, they did the best they could, and I'm happy with the job they did. I don't know, but I'm sure they are too. But there are definitely moments where, you know, we didn't have certain conversations that I wish we did. And I what I do like in the show is even though we see Ginny struggling with this, and it is a secret that she keeps to herself, in terms of how she copes with her mental health and how she copes with the things that she's going through, we do see bits of, you know, her and her mother having conversations very candidly with each other. And I never had that kind of relationship with my mom in terms of being open about coming to her about things that were happening with my peers or peer pressure, party, sex, things like that. And so what I do think that the show does well is it provides that kind of template of, look, just talk to your kids and they'll talk back, like, if you know, if you try to make that connection. And that's what I really hope that, and I have gotten messages from audiences and fans who have said that, you know, parents and children alike, that they finally have had important conversations that they were too afraid to have with their parents about certain things. And that to me is just really, really wonderful, because I think with mental health, you know, you need to find someone in your life who you can confide in and trust. And whether that be a therapist or, you know, a parent or a friend or a family member, it's about communication first. Mm. And feeling, you know, not feeling ashamed about feeling how you do. And I think for me now as an adult, I'm realizing more and more just how important that is, and just how important therapy is and how helpful it is. But it is unfortunate how it's not accessible to so many people. And I think it's more about mental health in America, I think, is more about, it's about accessibility. It's about educating people on their, you know, the resources that are available to them, and making it, destigmatizing it, I think. And I'm noticing within myself the destigmatizing of mental health, and knowing that it's okay if you need help, and most people do. And I think that's the first step toward bettering yourself and becoming stronger, a stronger, healthier person.
Mm. Because the real tea is that we all have mental health, don't we?
Have mental health that we need to, like, take care of.
Yeah, and we all need to look after. Yeah. And it's just like, just through being open and honest about it, you learn that there's so many people out there who've had similar experiences. And then all of a sudden, by vocalizing it, you then feel so much less alone, don't you?
Alone, exactly. That's exactly right. And it helps to kind of see the forest instead of the trees, and kind of just, I don't know, I my hope is that we can see, I think we're seeing that shift. We're more open about talking about things like mental health and reaching out to people. And I think especially with social distancing, it's hard to know if there are loved ones or people in your life who are suffering, because it's through a computer screen, or you can't, you know, I haven't seen some of my friends in over a year, and so in person. And so I think it's more important now than ever before.
Absolutely. And this is what Making It Rain is all about. Queen, is
yes,
like open, honest conversations, breaking down those boundaries.
right
yes,
exactly.
And as a queen yourself, who do you think has passed the crown onto you, and who's inspired you?
Professionally, I will say being able to work with the women that I worked with on the show, on Ginny and Georgia, Sarah Lampert, the show creator, Deb Fisher, the showrunner, and Brianne Howie, who plays Georgia, like just the women, and Anya Adams, the director, like just these women are so driven. They're so strong. They're so funny. They don't pretend, you know, it's just funny to be able to walk on set and someone be like, hey, I need a tampon, and like, you know, like it doesn't matter, we all experience life, and we're open about it, and we're honest about it. And that's being in a professional setting where that was my environment. It really, I think, was such a special thing for me to especially for it to be my first experience in a real big role like this, to be able to look up to these women, to know that going forward in this industry, I can speak up, I can speak my mind, I can say the things that I need to say and be heard, and it's damn well expected, you know, it should be expected. And to have that kind of reinforced by these women, these wonderful women, I think I will always value that.
Oh my God, I love to hear it. And we're going to be hearing
I love it.
More about that after this quick break. Make It Rain is proud to be working with Aurelia London, the experts in probiotic skincare. I don't know about you, but coming out of winter, my skin is looking super dull. So to bring back my glow, I've been using Aurelia London's Probiotic Concentrate to supercharge my everyday skin routine, using it alongside the Aurelia London Day Moisturiser. Probiotic skincare gives the ultimate glow, no matter what your skin concern is, from fine lines to rosacea and even pigmentation or acne. And because Aurelia London and Make It Rain are all about empowering people to glow inside and out, I have a special code for you. Get 20% off the entire range by heading to aurelialondon.com and using the code Josh20 at the checkout. Welcome back, babe. We touched on this slightly in the last part. We were talking about how the show destigmatizes so much stuff about growing up, which I think is so important. But looking back at your own life growing up, what do you wish was kind of destigmatized at that time?
For me, I feel that by the time I graduated high school, I feel like if I was just maybe 3 or 4 years younger, then maybe my high school experience would have been a little bit more, a little bit less stressful. I think we were still kind of concerned with gender stereotypes, for example, and making sure that we were falling into mainstream ideas of how we were supposed to be. And I know I definitely struggled with that a lot growing up, and I didn't, because I didn't fit into the idea of the typical, you know, idea of femininity, and it wasn't something. Experiencing my body and living in my body from being a teenager and, you know, an adult, you know, in middle school through high school, I felt deeply uncomfortable with things that I was expected to do just because of being a girl, just because of being you know, who I was. And so I did struggle with my identity in that sense. I remember I didn't want, you know, how everyone, you know, like in Mean Girls, everyone's like, oh, you know, so-and-so has, they, you know, you dress a certain way to be the popular girl, and just like in middle school, for among girls, it's oh, who got their period first, and are they starting to wear bras now, and things like that. And I was always kind of uncomfortable with conversations like that, because I knew with that came the male gaze, and it made my skin crawl. And so I would much like Ginny, actually, I would hide underneath my clothes, and I secretly ordered breast binders on the internet without my parents knowing, and I would wear them to just because I didn't like I was like I don't want to grow boobs, like I don't want boys to look at me, and I like would wear, you know, I would dress in boys' clothes. I would kind of hide away any sort of part of me that I was uncomfortable with, you know, exposing to the world because of what I was supposed to do at the time. And, you know, what I love now is that you see it's still difficult, and it's still a journey that everyone has to take in terms of, you know, how they feel comfortable expressing their identity, and that can take any sort of form it takes throughout one's lifetime. But I do like to see now that young people, especially teenagers, are feeling a lot more open and confident with exploring that aspect of themselves, and it seems to be a more open concept than it was when I was that age. And so that is something that I wish I could have embraced more, was just being comfortable in my own skin, being comfortable in my own body, and not worrying about what other people wanted from me. So, because, I mean, I remember being told, oh, why do you dress like that? Like, you're barely even a girl, or why do you wear your hair that way? This is why you're not going to get a boyfriend, and things like that. And just being completely at odds with, I guess, the times, but barely, just like on the cusp of it. So
Yeah. I so know what you mean about those gender stereotypes, because speaking as someone who was like a very, and I hate using these words like feminine, masculine, but being a very like feminine boy. And then when I was like having to be forced to play like rugby at school like run around to like rugby tackle people. And I was like, oh my God, like literally like, and also just being so freaked out because then knowing that I was like gay living in this like teenage body, and then also being like, oh my God, well, if I touch these boys, they're probably going to think I'm gay and I'm going to be out and then I'm going to be stuffed. But like,
oh my God,
that's like, it's so difficult, isn't it? When you're trying to understand yourself. And this is what we were saying at the top of this chat as well. It's about the boxes, isn't it? The boxes just need to be broken down. They need to be put in the recycling bin and sent out to the trash. And then we never want to see them again. Like, that's what we need to happen.
Exactly. And it's so difficult because, especially as kids, we take cues from everyone around us. And something as simple as... You know, if you hear your friend saying something misogynist or homophobic or you know, any sort of microaggression or even macro, you know, if you notice that, something as simple as calling that out in the moment, that does so much more than, you know, ignoring it and trying to make these big posts about it later or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, it starts within your own social group, and the more accepting and we can be with each other, but also the more we hold ourselves and our friends and our peers accountable, I think that is the gradual change that we need. And it's really important. These small little instances are important to witness and to address in the moment, but I know it's hard to do that as well, because there's so many times where I've, like I said, where I've been like told crazy, outrageous things, and I'm like, am I really hearing what I'm hearing? And I don't say anything in the moment, and it's not until I'm showering later that I'm like, damn it, I should have just you really should have laid one in them. And like
and then you're having the debate with the shower bottle, because that's what happens to me, and I'm literally then like, I'm just going to tell you this right now, because I should have said it to you earlier, but I can't. But that is but that's so important what you're saying there, because everyone needs to recognize that you don't need like 1 million followers on Instagram to have a platform. Mm-hmm. Your platform starts with you. You are your platform, right?
And, exactly.
And you can go into any social situation and that is your platform, right? And if you're hearing these things, call them out if you feel safe to do so. Like, that's how,
if you feel safe to do so, of course.
Yeah, because if we can create change in our own pockets of the world and everyone does that, then the pockets come together and create a whole world of change, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it's I think that's it, and that's the thing. But I do know it is a much bigger, it's a big mountain to climb, and I think we're all climbing it in our own ways. So that's why I think I'm happy to see the conversations come forward a lot more now than it did, I think, when like 10 years ago or six, how long ago was I Jenny's age? I don't know, like 7 years. I think, just in 7 years' time, I have noticed a difference from when I was that age versus now. So I think there's a lot of progress being made. I do. I'm optimistic.
Yeah. In the words of Diana Ross, ain't no mountain high enough. We can get to that top of that mountain, right?
Yes.
Into it. Because you were just saying you didn't feel so confident in yourself and your body. Do you feel, sitting here today, you're the most confident you've been, and do you feel like you can sit here and say you're wearing your crown with the most pride than you ever have done before?
I will say more days now than I had before. Every day it's an up and down. But I will say, in a lot of ways, yes, I feel a lot more, I've accepted a lot more of myself. I think I love myself a lot more than I did back then. And because of that, I'm trying to make sure that I can funnel that love outwardly as well, because when you don't like who you are, when you're uncomfortable or insecure about a lot of things about yourself, you can take it out on others. You can kind of shut yourself off. And I know I had a really hard time with that growing up, and now I've come a long way. And I feel like it's having the platform that I do now, like, yes, you know, it is a lot more, there is a lot more responsibility, I think, that I innately carry, and I want to make sure that I'm honest and authentic and just kind of trying to be as positive as I can, but also as realistic. Like, yeah, I have days where I'm like, I look in the mirror and I'm like, girl, what? Like, what are you doing? And, or, you know, I you know, sometimes when you get, when you still experience microaggressions, or you get catcalled, or you get, you know, like I said, reduced to something that someone else wants to reduce you to, it is still hard. I mean, just because you're older doesn't make it easier necessarily, but I feel like I have grown a lot since then, and I just hope that I can be someone who, you know, I know a lot of my fans are teens, and they're in middle school and high school, and they're trying to figure out who they are, and they're trying to figure out, navigate life. And so if I could give any words of advice to them, I hope that it helps them accept themselves and embrace themselves in an environment that is so confusing.
Oh my god, it is so confusing. Just looking back on it, I'm just like, oh, I would never want to go.
I know,
back to
I cringe.
I'm literally like, I'm cringing for like 14-year-old Josh, who's like sat there with the acne, who's literally just like so uncomfortable themselves. And someone said this to me the other day, like, everyone in life is kind of like a Russian doll, and you take the younger you with you, yes, wherever you go, right? And so
that's
I
true.
Sometimes feel like I go into life in certain situations, I think, oh my god, 14-year-old me would be so proud of me right now. And it'd be like,
yes, I thought of that, yeah.
It's like, yes, babe, go get him. Do you think that, yes, say, like, 15-year-old you would be so proud of you and what you've been able to do in terms of overcoming those confidence hurdles?
I think so. I actually, that's funny you asked that, because last night, I was, because I'm at my parents' house right now, I'm visiting. And I went into my little, you know, I had a little chest that has all my diaries in it, and I picked one that was like from 2010, where I was in like eighth grade. So I was just reading it, and I was like, oh my god, this poor girl, like, is so confused, is so insecure, and is, you know, is hurting and has no idea, like, is doubting herself so much. And if I knew then that I would have had the opportunities that I've been so lucky to have now, I would not believe it. And so I definitely think my 15, 14, 13-year-old self would be like jaw-dropped at what I've been able to so gratefully do by now.
Oh my god, what was in the diary?
Oh my gosh, I was like sitting at lunch, and just like in the morning, you know, when you go into the, we would go into the commons, and we'd just like sit down, and some kids would be eating breakfast and others would be like, I don't know, shooting the shit. But I would like write things of like, so existential, like, what is the purpose of school? And what is the purpose of having friendships if you can't be yourself? And I'm like, yo, you need to relax. And things like, what am I even doing here? What do I think I'm gonna achieve in my short life? Over here talking like I'm a 65-year-old woman who's done nothing with her life. And I'm like, calm down, you're 13. So
calm down, you're 13, you've so got it. Do you think as well, in terms of like how representation has changed in the beauty industry and also on TV and in movies and in entertainment in general, has helped you be more confident in yourself and feel more like valued, seen and heard, especially like the way that this TV show does?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. I think if I had a TV show like Ginny and Georgia growing up, I don't know how much different my life would have been. Really different, I think, and the way I viewed myself would have been really different. I think it's very important, and because, you know, if you don't see yourself in whether it's in the beauty industry, if you don't see yourself reflected in it, then you won't feel that you're beautiful. If there are standards that don't fit how you look and how you are, and it's constantly perpetuated as the ideal, then you won't feel ideal. If you don't see yourself in roles, you know, on movies and television, if you don't see people who look like you in leadership roles, as presidents, as you know, people who are successful, and even on the barest minimum, like just people who are happy and doing their thing or you know, struggling with the same things you are, but overcoming it. If you don't see those things, if you don't see those stories, then you won't feel like you matter, and you won't feel like you can get out of any situation that you're in or improve, or, you know, whatever your dreams may be, they'll feel even farther away than they really are. And so I think we have a huge responsibility to make sure that we are including and diversifying as much as we can, not for some tokenism, not to meet a quota, not for any other reason than this is important for our society. This is important for the health of our country, mentally, physically. This is important for us to move forward and make progress interpersonally, because that is something that we latch onto most. And reflecting positivity for so many more than what we're used to seeing is such a good thing. And it's I'm happy to see the changes being made, and we have a lot of work to do, but I am glad to be a part of it during this time, because it is important.
And you get to continue that work, babe, because you are about to go into, well, season two has been announced. It's happening. Jean Georgia, yes. Season two. Yes. Giving us the goods that we all need.
Yes.
Yes.
I know. We were all biting our fingernails, chewing off our limbs.
But if you could be in that writer's room right now, creating the second season, what would you love to see happen?
Oh, man. I want to see friendships being... I loved the moments with Ginny and Marcus when they just, like... Marcus is, like, the only one who listens to Ginny, okay? And I think in a lot of ways, Ginny's the only one who listens to Marcus. And just to see them kind of be open about their feelings and just to talk about it in a vulnerable way. Like, I want to see more of that. I want to see the barriers break down for a little bit. And I also want to see Georgia get... Like, I'm curious about this whole detective situation. And, you know, I love me some murder mysteries going on. But I just love these characters, and I'm excited for their stories to be explored. And I'm also terrified of what Sarah's big brain, the creator, is going to do. So we'll see what we try to tackle on in season two.
Well, we're excited for it, and we've already come to the end of the episode, which I'm devastated about, babe.
Oh my gosh.
I love talking to you.
I kept talking so much.
Babe, this is a place for everyone to talk and say what they think, so don't you worry about it. But at the end of every episode, I always ask, in the reign of your life, what is the one rule you will always live by?
Oh my gosh. Okay. The one rule that I would always live by. You are who you want to be in any given moment.
Oh, I love that. When have you relied on that rule at times?
Man, I feel invincible.
I love that.
Don't do it for anybody else. Do it for you. You know?
Always. You have to look after the relationship with yourself, right? That's the most important thing of all.
Yes. Because if you don't, then how are you going to help anybody else? You can't help yourself.
Exactly.
You got to.
Yes! Well, I've loved talking to you. Thank you so much for making it rain.
I love this too.
Oh my God. This has been like so much goodness. And like, honestly, I wish I had a TV show like this when I was growing up. And I think it's so important and it's so powerful in so many ways. And what you're doing is incredible. So keep making it rain, queen.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening, queens. I hope you enjoyed this conversation and take just as much away from it as I have. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcast from, so you'll know which amazing queen is joining me next time. And make sure you share this around your friends and get those conversations going, because we need each other now more than ever before. Hi babes, me again. Just wanted to tell you about something
very exciting. I can't believe I'm about to tell you this, but I've written a book and it's called Great Chat. As you know, I love to chat, plot spoiler, and I love talking to people about their lives because, as I always say, talking and listening is so powerful. The book is all about how you can master conversation and transform your life, just like it has for me. I've used my experience from all the amazing interviews I've been lucky enough to do, as well as a load of research to help you deal with everything from making new friends to embracing difficult discussions. Great Chat should never be underestimated. It can truly improve your well-being, allow you to create the life you want, and bring the connections you are so deserving of, babes. You can pre-order Great Chat today in hardback, ebook, and audiobook, read by me, no less, and it's out on the 20th of June.